This is the Marathon Training Academy Podcast, episode 440.
This podcast is sponsored by Prevenix, makers of Joint Health Plus, which we take every day to keep our knees and other joints happy. And now they make Muscle Health Plus, the most comprehensive muscle health supplement clinically proven to decrease muscle breakdown, increase lean muscle mass, and boost protein synthesis. Use the code MTASTRENGTH at checkout and have Muscle Health Plus in the cart and you'll save 15% off your entire order, even if you've previously used our code. Visit Prevenex.com, that's Prevenex.com, and use code MTASTRENGTH at checkout.
Hey, big thanks to the Drury Hotel Company for sponsoring the podcast. They've been a sponsor of ours almost since the beginning. And if you're traveling somewhere in the U.S., definitely look for a Drury Hotel. They're so nice. They got free breakfast and free food and drinks in the evening. It's what they call the 5:30 kickback. You can use our link to save 10% on your stay at any location around the U.S. They're in over 25 states. Just go to druryhotels.com/MTA to get that discount. druryhotels.com/MTA. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy Podcast, where we inspire and empower you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we speak with fellow podcaster Tina Muir, co-author of the book, Becoming a Sustainable Runner, A Guide to Running for Life, Community, and Planet. And just a reminder, you can get all of our training plans, back podcast episodes, courses, and more as an Academy member. Find out how to join when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. All right. Well, we just got back from Japan last night. We're still actually adjusted to Japanese time, which is 14 hours ahead. So how's that working out for you, Angie?
My body doesn't know what time it is. In fact, my Oura Ring doesn't know what's going on either. It's like, your bedtime today is 6:30 in the morning.
No. But wow, we had such a blast in Japan. What an amazing country. And Tokyo Marathon was so fun. We got to meet a lot of listeners over there. And we've got a big race recap that we're going to work on. So look for that around March 20th. That'll be our next episode after this. We would do it now, but we just don't have enough time to get it all put together and do it justice. So definitely look for it in the next episode. But today we're excited to talk with Tina Muir. We know you'll enjoy this conversation. Let's give a couple shout outs before we get any further, Angie, today. Let's see what is going on out there in MTA land.
We'd like to say congratulations to Julia on running a 10-minute marathon PR at the Napa Valley Marathon with a time of 4:02. She is a coaching client of Coach Athena. And this comes from Jervis in the Academy. He says, I ran my first marathon this last Sunday, and it was an experience. Huge thanks to Angie and Trevor for all the knowledge and inspiration I've gained listening to the podcast for the last several months. My time was 4:18. However, halfway through, I was at 1:43. At mile 11, my legs got tired as I had gone out too fast. Then by mile 16, everything in my legs were cramping. Even though the time isn't what I was expecting, I am super proud of myself for finding the mental strength to push through and finish. My next marathon is planned for October. Hopefully I'll be healthy and I'll have a better time training. I'll be using an MTA plan for the first time. Anyway, thank you for all the support and stories this community gives out. I am just now joining the group, but the success stories from everyone here that is shared on the podcast helped me get through those last 10 miles.
Those are tough 10 miles, those last 10 miles of marathon.
That's right.
We love sharing success stories. That is what fires us up and keeps us going. And congrats, Jervis, on running your first marathon. Looking forward to seeing what happens at your next marathon. And we're excited to have you in the group.
And this final email comes from Bernice. She says, my husband surprised me by gifting me 3 months of MTA coaching for Christmas. It came at a perfect time as I was getting ready to run my 8th half marathon. I was assigned to Coach Lynn, who has an incredible running history and is also a nutritionist. She's impressive. I didn't know what to expect, but Coach Lynn quickly helped me identify key goals, and I was amazed by all that I learned. I look forward to reading Coach Lynn's detailed emails with feedback on my runs and information for continued progress. class. I learned to focus on my breathing, pacing, conquering hills, increasing my speed, fueling, and pre- and post-run exercises. I ran the Zion Half Marathon and finished in 2:11:15. This was the goal I wanted to accomplish. Not only was I able to improve my time, I was able to enjoy the race and run with confidence, knowing I was prepared for this hilly course. I'm thankful to Coach Lynn for teaching me how to run. I recommend MTA coaching to anyone who is looking to get better in this sport and enjoy the miles. This has been an invaluable experience. And she says, thank you, MTA. And that comes from Bernice.
Well, thank you so much for that nice email. Congrats on running the Zion Half Marathon. It looks beautiful. Congrats to everyone out there just getting it done. We hope that this conversation is inspiring. We're going to talk with Tina about all kinds of stuff, including plogging. You say, what is plogging?
Listen to find out.
You will learn something new today. Angie, what can we tell people about Tina Muir?
Tina is originally from England. She was a professional runner who represented Great Britain and Northern Ireland in a world championship. She's the host of the Running for Real podcast. In 2021, she began collaborating with the United Nations and has been celebrated as one of the lead climate activists in the running space.
And one more time, her new book is called Becoming a Sustainable Runner, A Guide to Running for Life, Community, and Planet, which she co-wrote with Zoe Rome. So without further ado, here's our conversation with Tina Muir.
Well on my way. Well on my way, well on my way. Now that I'm well on my way. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
Okay, we're on the podcast now with Tina Muir, co-author of the book Becoming a Sustainable Runner. Tina, welcome to the MTA podcast. It's been a while.
It has been a while. That is a long time ago since I've been on here, and I'm very excited to be back. So,
yeah, it was 2017. I looked it up. I think when we talked to you last on the podcast, you had just represented Great Britain in the
wow.
World Half Marathon.
Yes, that was a lifetime away.
Championships, yeah. A lot has happened in your life, so I thought maybe you could just bring us up to speed. I know mm-hmm. one thing you've done is moved since then. I think you were in Kentucky last time we talked to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, moving was kind of the smallest thing that happened. yes, I live in St. Louis now. I have two children now.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really funny because that would have been right before I quit running. Because if we talked in 2017, I quit early 2017. So mm-hmm. I dramatically and emotionally quit running and now running again, but with a different purpose in mind. I'm sure we'll talk about some of that. Yeah, have had two children, returned to running, tried to make somewhat of a, I don't know if I'd call it a comeback, but tried to be competitive before deciding, nah, I'd rather hang out with everyone else in the middle of races. So now I do a lot of giving back through guiding visually impaired runners, or any listeners who may remember seeing Kaylee Williamson finished New York, who has Down syndrome. I was her guide for that.
Nice.
And I have completely shifted my career path to now be kind of one of the voices in sustainability and running, very much targeted towards getting people to feel like they're part of the solution, because I feel like everything environmentally is very much telling us go vegan and never go in a plane, be extreme or don't bother at all. And that's very off-putting. I very much believe in speaking to everyone that we can all do our part in starting wherever we're at. So that's kind of it in a gist.
A lot has happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you feel like the changes in your life, was that what led to writing this book? Because, you know, you kind of went from, in a way, an unsustainable approach to running. I mean, you were very successful. You know, it was working until it didn't work, but it wasn't sustainable for you on a personal basis. Mm-hmm. And so kind of your journey into what running can look like as a sustainable runner, starting with self and obviously then branching out into community and the planet, you know, kind of tell us like how the book came to be.
Yeah. I mean, elements of it had been building for a long time. I have very much always been someone who wanted to look at the long term. My coach in high school, and I may have even talked about him, was very much a believer in like running for life. He didn't push me too hard in high school because he wanted me to have a lifelong career. But then, yes, somewhere along the way, I got wrapped up in kind of the here, the now, the next race, and letting that dictate my, you know, long term future for short term success. And it wasn't sustainable. And I think that's where, for me, why I reached a breaking point to which something had to give. I've explained this to hundreds of people now, but a lot of people look to elite runners and they think, wow, they've just got it all together. But as you just said, a lot of the time it isn't sustainable. And we do see this. A lot of runners like do very well and then crash out of the sport, or do very well and then struggle to get back to where they were. And for me, I knew there had to be more to it, because running started off as joyful. So I had to find a way back to that. And I have really loved learning along this journey of writing the book, of reflecting on those experiences, and not saying don't challenge yourself, don't set goals, don't do things that are hard for you. But how can we do it in a way that if you don't achieve your goal, if a race doesn't go well, how can you have more to it than just the results? And then the environmental piece of the word sustainable is something, have either of you or both of you seen Fern Gully?
No.
Is a cartoon back in the 90s, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe I have seen that.
Yeah, with the fairies that live in the forest.
Angie wasn't allowed to watch TV as a kid, so.
Okay. Well, you should go back and watch it. My children now love it. It's like a way ahead of its time. Yeah, about fairies that live in the forest, and the forest is being cut down, and the fairies talk about how the trees, they feel pain. Anyway, so that was very much the start for me. I'd always cared about sustainability, always been interested environmentally. And I just started thinking about it, talking about it amongst my close friends, until one day one of them was like, why do you talk about this and vent about this incessantly to us, but you never say anything publicly? And then I did. And then 8 days later, Chicago reached out, Chicago Marathon. And I was like, okay, I guess this is the direction I'm headed in. And so then that really kind of set that direction in terms of sustainability and the book coming together.
Well, what did the Chicago Marathon want you to do?
They have a sustainability person. They actually have two now, but at the time they had one. And they're doing the work, but they recognize that if people aren't participating in what they're doing, for example, if they put up compost, recycling, and trash bins, and then have TerraCycle collection for bar wrappers and gels, and they're collecting up the heat sheets, those like aluminum foil things, but no one is giving them in, what's the point in doing it? So they wanted help in getting the word out and getting runners to just break that cycle of habitually throwing anything in any trash can. And so they just saw what I was doing and thought that I would be a good person to bring in to help with their getting the word out about what they were doing.
I was at the Boulderthon in Boulder, Colorado last year. And then at the end of the race, because I stuck around to kind of see how things were wrapped up, and they had an eco team, which I thought that was a good idea. And one of the jobs of the team was to make sure that every scrap of litter was picked up. And I've always hated litter. I guess it's how my parents raised me. It's one good thing they instilled in me. I didn't listen to anything else. If my mom is listening. Thanks, Mom. But I'm kind of jumping ahead because I wanted to talk about this later. But I love the concept of plogging.
Yeah.
And I had not heard that term until I heard it from you, either maybe from your Instagram, but here in the book, you talk about plogging as well. So what is plogging? Everyone can go out and plog today if they want to.
Well, firstly, I want to recognize the fact that you said about you hate litter and said it in a way of like, I'm a rare person that does. You know, like we should all like hate this.
Like even our route around here. I mean, Angie, she was just saying, it seems like all the litter that you usually see is like fast food. And what were you saying?
Beer cans, soda cans, like cigarette butts, like a lot of just things. And it was thinking like, I don't want to like come across as judgmental, because people are doing the best that they can, but it seems like they are not taking care of themselves. And that has waves that goes out into the world. And so it's like, you have to start by taking good care of yourself and developing that self-compassion and love. Then you can like spread that throughout the world, like loving other people, loving the environment.
Well, two things. One, Trevor, I'm going to need to borrow Angie for the next year. That was the perfect description of my book. So
I can negotiate a contract right now. I'm her.
A sustainable contract.
Her manager. So.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. And that is the whole concept of the book as a whole, is like, you can't take care of your community and the planet if you're not taking care of yourself and giving yourself exactly what you said, compassion and understanding and respect. But also, when we see trash, and this is like a subconscious thing in humans, when there is trash, you think, well, doesn't matter anyway, what's one more thing? But when that's the one of the beautiful things that I've experienced through this plogging, which is, yes, picking up trash while running. Yes, it could be like I might do at these events at major races, where we get a whole group of us, we go around. And by the way, you said about cigarette butts. cigarette butts, especially in New York, is like the number one thing I pick up. And I don't, in my head, no one smokes anymore, but somehow.
I know, I'm like, who smokes these things?
There's so many cigarette butts everywhere. But it really wakes people up to, I did a plugging event in Boston, in Dorchester, in one of the neighborhoods with Pioneers Run Crew. And afterwards, all the people that did it were like, wow, I'd never thought about all these times I just run over things. I just step over them. And if I just reached to grab it, you know, I could have just put that in the trash. And if every runner picked up one item during their runs, think about how much trash there would be. Just one thing. So it can be an event like what I do, but it can also just be where you run, you see a plastic bottle. And I did it yesterday. I was running with a friend. We were on the trails and I saw the pretzel, rolled gold or whatever they're called. One, a packet of that, and it stood out because in the trails you don't tend to see it as much. So I just bent down and grabbed it. That wasn't like a big pat me on the back thing. That was just the like, there's a piece of trash that doesn't fit here. I'm going to take it away. So it can just be something incorporated into daily life, you know, walking your kids to school, you pick up a piece of trash on the way. And that's just something that exactly what you were saying, like taking pride in yourself and in your community. I am proud to live here. I want to make this a better place than I left it. And if you want to organize events in your area to do a group one, even better.
Great way to get some squats in too while you're out there.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah, you've got to pick it up correctly. I actually do often host them the day before races and people get very nervous, but then they see that we're running literally 25 minute pace and they're like, oh, okay, this is not really taxing my body very much.
So that's cool. So you'll go to a marathon and put it out to your network and like the day before do a meetup where you guys go around and plug.
Yeah. So instead of that's like nice. A shakeout, it gives people a way to do something good, feel good about themselves. And also, especially, I personally feel, and this is me coming from, I recognize I have that privilege of a body that can run fast anytime I want it to. But I feel like a lot of shakeouts end up going too fast, end up taxing people. This is a way of basically walking, but a way to give back, a way to be a part of a community event. So yeah, I will do that. We're actually going to do one in Boston. I really want to make it 500 people. And so I'm using all my contact points that I can think of to get it out there, or will be. I've got kind of a list in mind. So I will be doing one before Boston, but I did it before New York and it was just amazing. Ending up in Times Square with all these bags of trash that we had removed from the ground. And, you know, people yell things like, wow, that's so inspiring, or appreciate you. A little kid yelled at one point, wow, Dad, those are some good people. Aww. You know, like little things like that, that just make you like, this is appreciated. Even though I recognize in New York, that amount of trash will probably be back on the ground again next week. It's something, and it makes you just start having pride in where you live and where you visit.
So I wanted to like kind of rewind a little bit because I'm really fascinated by this concept of having more self-compassion, separating the ego from running. And, and you know, you could look at this in any area of life. And I think in the book, you guys write about separating self-worth from outcomes. Mm-hmm. One quote from Zoe that was really good. I think she had gone through several DNFs in her running. And she said, running became an exercise in self-compassion rather than a negative self-assessment.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where it starts, because so many people attach their ego to their running or to their physical appearance or their pace or the distance they're doing. And it can become just really kind of a negative feedback cycle.
Yeah. What's coming to mind when you bring that up is not so much even necessarily the outcome piece, but a lot of runners, and I'd imagine this is a lot of your listeners, this has certainly been me in the past, tend to get to a place where they're running, they're doing their race, things are going well, the dream is coming true, and then all of a sudden something goes wrong. Your stomach is upset, you dropped your gel on the floor, you get a stitch, something. And rather than saying, okay, all right, something has gone wrong, it's okay, like let's just regroup and take it slow for the next mile, we'll assess in a mile. You know, people have told me, even if I feel bad at mile 16, doesn't mean I won't feel good at 18. Instead, we say, oh, it's all unraveling. This was never meant to be. I can't do this. I guess this day is just a waste of time. Like, I'm useless. And you start berating yourself when actually, yeah, in a mile, you could have felt good again and you make up the time. And for me, that's what I used to do very much, that like anger towards myself when it was going wrong of like, oh, well, of course this happens to me. Of course everything goes wrong. But then when that happened, what happens? You get tense and you give up. You just say, fine, I'm just going to pick another race. I'll do it next time. And instead, giving yourself that self-compassion, that trust, that respect, if you are able to do that, even if it doesn't all come together, maybe you find another runner who's a friend who just happens to come by you and you get to have this experience together. Or maybe you decide, okay, I'm going to just take this moment where I see my family rather than high five. I'm going to give them a hug and they'll say, I'm so proud of you, and I'll get this experience. So I think self-compassion is such a critical piece of not only running to our best, but that joy of keeping it sustainable for long term rather than just this short term success at all costs, which just has us flipping between I feel amazing and I can't do this. Right.
Because even when you do tap into that success, that moment where it just feels like everything is coming together, life is all about change and doesn't mean that your next race, your next goal is going to come together like that. I feel like especially as women, we ride that cycle even more strongly just because our bodies are always in flux. And just when you think you get one thing figured out, then, oh, surprise, something's changing.
I just had the conversation with my six-year-old. She was saying about something changing. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but the only thing we can be sure about is that things change. And she was like, what? Like, how dare you tell me that things change every day? I was like, sorry, that's the reality of life.
Yeah. You're so, preparing her early. That's smart.
She doesn't like the concept, but it's coming whether she likes it or not.
None of us like it that much.
But for sure. Yeah.
Hey, quick break to thank our episode sponsor, Prevenex, makers of Joint Health Plus and Muscle Health Plus. One way to be a sustainable runner is to take care of those joints and those muscles.
And that's why we recommend Joint Health Plus, because it is really key to keeping your cartilage and joints healthy. It contains boswellin, which is a natural, powerful, and clinically proven anti-inflammatory and pain reliever that provides additional support for joints. We know it's not good to be taking NSAIDs for pain, so this is a great alternative. It also has NEM, which is clinically proven to reduce joint pain, joint stiffness, and improve joint flexibility in 7 to 10 days. And the other product we love is called Muscle Health Plus. It's designed to fuel your muscle health by decreasing muscle breakdown, increasing lean muscle mass, which we can all use more of. And Muscle Health Plus combines ingredients that you'd normally get from 2 to 3 different products. So you'll be taking a great product and saving money at the same time.
And to help you save even more, you can use the code MTASTRENGTH at checkout. If you have Muscle Health Plus in the cart, you'll save 15% on the entire order, even if you've used our code in the past. Just visit Prevenex.com. Use the code MTASTRENGTH. So yeah, along these lines, there's another great quote from the book we wrote down. It says, when your ego is tied to a certain outcome, everything feels like a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. Did it feel that way sometimes as an elite runner?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it just made it to where I got to a point, and I guess as I haven't been on here since 2017, I got to a point, this is when I really realized something was wrong for me, was when I was in January and I was looking at a race in July and thinking, I can't wait to be at the finish. Was like the finish. It wasn't even, I can't wait to get on the start line. I can't wait to be at the race. The finish. It all gone. And so, yeah, I absolutely felt that way. And at times, sometimes I have to remind myself not to fall into that same trap because it is tempting. And we are told in many ways, this is what running is. And so in many ways, we are all fighting like salmon swimming upstream to continue verging from that path. In the same way that I'm sure many of your listeners, it often feels like unless you're running marathons, you're not really a runner. Or, you know, if you aren't running marathons, well, when are you going to do a marathon? And I just don't agree with that messaging. So there's a lot of things that I really, and Zoe as well, we both really feel passionately about trying to find more to your running than just those results, those outcomes, those monumental moments, because you just miss so much when you're focused that way.
And I think that comes across really strong just in the short stories you share, the examples on how to be a sustainable runner, how, you know, really you need to be in it for the journey and not just that finish line that is easy to fantasize about.
Yeah. And then you also, when you do that, you get to race week and all you're thinking is, I don't want to hurt. I don't want to hurt. I'm scared of that pain because you've made it about the wrong thing. So, yeah.
It feels great to finish a marathon. It feels great to finally sit down when you...
Well, as long as you're not getting up anytime soon.
Exactly.
Yeah. It probably feels amazing to stand on a podium. I've never had that experience that you have, Tina. But I remember you telling us you won a race and you didn't know what to do with your hands when you broke the tape. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. No, that's so funny. That's actually, now I look back on it, that was one of my favorite races, but that moment was funny. Although I did have 2 years after that. So my first postpartum race was the Disney World half marathon. And because of what we've been talking about, I decided I wanted it to be about fun. So I signed up for the Disney World half and then I was running towards the finish and I was winning, which, yes, again, privileged body, I recognize that. And Mickey and Donald were facing away from me. And so I was like, oh, they don't know I'm coming. I don't know I'm coming. Like, am I just going to like tap them and be like, I'm finished? And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, they're not there for you. They're there for the picture. Their face, they're turned around because then in the picture, they're looking at the camera. It was the funniest thing of that moment being like, oh, this is not about me. This is about Disney World and doing what Disney World does, which is making the pictures afterwards. So that was another funny moment of coming into the finish.
Did you get anything special for winning?
Yeah, I got a very, like, at least 15 pound, if not 20 pound Donald trophy. Very, very heavy and awkward to carry. But... And I got some of the ears, you know, some ears, Disney World. But no, beyond that, I think everyone gets those maybe. No, beyond that, no. I got my favorite race picture of all time, though, with Mickey and Donald and confetti.
Yeah.
So that's what I got.
Can't top that.
Yeah. I'm not sure I ever can top that, to be honest. They're good at what they do.
Exactly.
You know, they know how to nail it.
I set that up because, like, as good as it feels to finish a marathon emotionally, psychologically, the next day, a lot of people get post-run blues, or the next week, you feel like you have to chase that high again. Uh-huh. And in the book, you guys talk about the hedonic treadmill.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could just speak about the hedonic treadmill and what that means to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of along the same lines of what we've been talking about, that we think, like, people look to elite runners and think, if I can just get to there, then I'll be happy. Or if I can just accomplish this, then I'll be happy. But it's that we have a general baseline in happiness. Each of us have it. And while you converge and you can think that when I do this, then I'll be happier. When I do this, then I'll be good. Then I'll check that box on happiness. It just doesn't work that way. And it's always going to flux back to where our baseline is. And so the concept of it being like a treadmill is that we never really get off that. And so the more we keep striving for if I, then I kind of thinking, we're just making ourselves miserable. And you said about those post-race blues. I think a lot of that is because we've put so much into this that we feel lost, because now it's become all about outcomes versus that journey of discovering a part of ourselves we didn't know, or the process of working through these challenges, the runs along the way. And I actually think this is a very good reminder in life too. And we started the book with, I can't remember exactly what we said, but running is a lot like life, only smaller. I believe that was the opening of the book. And it's very similar that in the US, at least, we live... And you get this with your kids. I am really struggling with the concept of, like, it's the 26th of December. I can't wait for Valentine's Day. And it's the 15th of February. I can't wait for Easter. And it's like constantly looking ahead. And I really try and teach my kids, like, there is something good and tough in every day. And running, we definitely do that a lot of, like, I can't wait for this. But even in that day post-race, there can be things we can celebrate that maybe are not as big and fulfilling as completing a race, but they are beautiful. Maybe we can enjoy the fact that we don't have to run and we can sit outside and have our coffee slowly. I don't know.
No, I totally agree. And as you're talking, I'm thinking also this can be related to, like, hedonic consumerism. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing I want to say is recognizing that to any of us, to you two, to myself, to anyone listening, it is not your fault. It is not your willpower. Same with like logging into social media. There are like some of the smartest people in the world working to get us to pick up our phones, to buy things, to make it as easy as possible for when our temptations are strong and know exactly what to put in front of our faces. So I want to first start with that because it feels, at least to me, like a lot of the time I'm like, ah, why'd you fall for that? but we're being targeted and we're not designed to be able to override that. And then beyond that, I would say that we're also in a world, again, a lot of this is money or privilege based, but they make it easy with the one click. They teach you and train you to buy things that are cheap, that break. So then you go back and buy another one. And so with runners, I think one of the biggest things you can do, as much as it feels uncomfortable and doesn't feel as good to buy fewer things that are really high quality, when you get those things that last and can handle wash after wash after wash and can handle the tough runner lifestyle and don't shrink, you know, Angie, you must have this, where the sleeve like works its way up till it's basically at your shoulder and you're like,
where's the sleeve going?
Like that is because they're not made of materials that are designed to last. And actually the average clothing item now starts to fall apart after 5 washes. And clothing used to be something that was passed down in wills. You know, literally, here, my son, take my coat that I've been wearing for my whole life. Like, it's insane. So buying fewer things that are higher quality is definitely the biggest thing I would say. There's also plenty of reuse options. Like, Zoe and I differ, and I'll be honest, in terms of like she does buy mostly used running clothes. I will be honest that for me is not somewhere I've got to, but in my casual day-to-day work clothes, I do buy used because you can find really good things for a lower price. And that also is a good example of the book is called Becoming a Sustainable Runner. We're not perfect. I'm not perfect. We're all going to have things that we prioritize. But also, I'd like to tell people to keep in mind where something is going afterwards. If you are going to buy glasses on December 30th that say Happy 2025, think through the fact that you'll wear those on New Year's Eve and yeah, you'll get some fun pictures, but then those are going to spend 100 years minimum in a landfill. Is that really worth like that picture? And so I try and get people to think about where this is going afterwards, not to paralyze you, because sometimes you don't have a choice. I often use the example of yogurt. Unless you live in the crunchiest city ever, you can't buy yogurt in a jar. It comes in plastic. And so it doesn't mean don't ever have yogurt. It just means that's something you don't have a choice over. That's where the system has to change. Mm-hmm. That was a bit rambly and off in many directions, but I think that was some examples.
No, I think that's really good examples. And I was thinking also like something that I do with my kids is, you know, especially when they were younger, they're like, oh, you know, they're begging for the latest thing. Like, oh, I've got to have this. All my friends have it. And like, okay, let's think about it. Let's think about it for a couple of weeks, you know, and we'll circle back then. If you still want that thing, if you're still wanting to spend your money on it, we'll consider it. And it's really interesting. And I find with myself too, if you just give yourself that pause, that breathing room, often you circle back and you're like, I don't need that, you know? So it's like those little things that you're talking about can really make a big difference.
Sure.
Quick break to thank our sponsors.
You're like, oh, but by the way, these are very important things. I hope I select carefully who you put there.
Right. Exactly.
So here's the question we had for you. What are some ways that runners can give back to the community?
This is such a critical piece for me and my long-term happiness, fulfillment, just feeling grounded in life is, for me, the first 14 years of my running life were all about me, what I get. It was not sustainable. Now that I have found ways to give back, I feel pure joy. And you'll have seen the picture in the book, the picture of me running as a guide for my friend Kyle, visually impaired runner. Oh, he had said to me, do you know where all the cameras were in the Boston Marathon? And I was like, no, I just genuinely was smiling the whole way. and he did say, he told me last time I saw him, like, you better add what I said afterwards. So this time I'm going to add what he said afterwards, which was, Well, next time, can you let me know when you do see a camera? But anyway, that's because it just feels good to be part of something bigger than yourself, to be a part of someone else's dream chasing. And so for me, what I do a lot of is, guiding for visually impaired runners.
Can I ask you about that real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I've never done it. Do you kind of hang on to the runner or just verbally guide them? And do you guys practice this beforehand?
Okay, these are literally the two biggest questions. So good thing. And the visually impaired community is always needing more guides. So it doesn't mean you commit to doing this every day for the rest of your life. You could do it once a week with a runner locally. You could just be in the resource directory so that someone says, hey, I'm coming in for the weekend to run this race. Is there any way you want to be a guide for me? And then you can sign up. To answer your question, it depends on the runner what they want and what their disability is. A lot of runners have tethers, which is kind of the rope about, I never know feet. I don't understand. Let's say like 3 hand widths apart. You hold one, they hold one, and you kind of give them some visual cues. Like for me, I would say 3, 2, 1. And when I say that, they know pick their feet up because something tricky is coming. So they know to be careful, essentially. It's essentially saying be careful in 3 seconds. Some people will hold on to your arm. Some people don't need you to hold on, but maybe when you turn a corner, like I have a friend, Mauricio, who has a traumatic brain injury, he just needs, when you turn corners, he'll grab my forearm so I can guide him where we're going. So it really depends on the person. And no, with every person I have run with, I have maybe gone on a run the day before with them for like a mile, but no, you don't need training. You don't need to practice beforehand. You get in a rhythm with them much quicker than you think. Each person is different in what they need. Like some people just need being told visual cues, but it tends to fit. And to demonstrate this point further, in 2022, I ran New York with a runner from Mongolia who was blind, but he didn't want a tether. He didn't want anything. And he's Mongolian. So we did not speak the same language.
Wow.
And we made it work.
Yeah.
So at times it was like, we were kind of a bit stumbly, but that was me stepping it up to a whole new level of guiding, you know. But I want to encourage as many people as possible because that's, for me, the greatest way of giving back. But you can also do things like volunteering. We all appreciate the fact that we get a cup or the fact that you have someone who to put your medal on you at the finish line. That is another way that you can give back to the community that's given you so much. So those are two of my favorite ways. There's also like pacing, you know, if you're someone who loves to run with a pacer, could you do that for another group? Not necessarily your PR pace, but, you know, a few groups back. So there's plenty of ways to like level up your relationship to running that don't have to affect your training. At my point, I kind of am at the point where it's affecting me a little bit. I shouldn't have really done a 10-hour marathon with Kaylee. That wasn't the best for my body and its cadence, but it was worth it for me. But for most runners who have goals, you can still do this without affecting your own training.
Can you tell us a little bit about that run? Because I do remember seeing Runner's World and other places post the photos of her crossing the finish line.
Yeah, I mean, it truly went viral. So I ran Boston with her and her mom in 2023. She did not finish. And afterwards, they were really deflated. And I wanted to give them a better opportunity. And I knew New York was a more welcoming and a space that would potentially allow them to thrive. So as I am fortunate to have friends in the right places in New York, I called them, said I'd like to bring Kaylee and Sandy in. And they said, amazing, let's do it. And so we went into the New York City Marathon, a very, very important marathon to Kaylee in general. Her grandma was one of her most treasured people in her life. She wanted to do it in her memory. And she kept saying, like, I can hear grandma telling me, go Kaylee, go Kaylee. And she'd say, you know, she was just talking about her grandma constantly. And that's the beautiful thing I want to add for listeners about Kaylee. If anyone's seen it, if you haven't, go watch it, have a tissue, you will cry. She doesn't do this. She does it for herself, but she does it for other people. She really does it for the people she loves. And so we started off New York and she just danced her way along the course, high-fived probably 500 people, was not in any kind of hurry. for me, that was a very strange situation to be in. While I've been a guide many times, every time the runner has had like, I'd like to run this speed and this is what I'm going to do. Kaylee was just out there for the experience. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we went through the halfway point in 5 hours and I thought, okay, it's going to be a long day. But yeah, she, I mean, and yes, as you see with her crossing the finish, she gave it everything she had. With a few miles to go, she was so done, but she kept moving forward. Hmm. We had to try new things constantly to keep her going when she was struggling. And yeah, wow. She ended up being such an inspiration for so many people of like, you know, challenge yourself, see what you can do. But also to my points earlier, doesn't mean it can't be fun. Doesn't mean you can't find joy along the way, mm-hmm. even if you are pushing yourself to your limit.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, she is amazing.
We weren't even planning to ask you that. So it's cool how this just comes about, you know.
Well, I do want to say for anyone who's running the United Half in March, Kaylee and I and Sandy are going to do that. Mm. And we're also hosting a plugging event the day before.
Nice. So,
ding, ding. If someone wants to meet Kaylee, and she gives the best hugs in the world, like better than my children, like literally best hugs in the world. And so if anyone wants to come meet her or come to the plugging, we'll be there together.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Everyone go check out the book, Becoming a Sustainable Runner by Tina Muir and Zoe Rome. Tina, great to speak with you again. It's been a long time. I'm glad we got to catch up. And if we want to send listeners to your official home online, where is that home?
Where's that home? One of the homes is under repair or like having a resting period. So the main place I would send them to is runningforreal.com, as that's where it's most up to date. They can find me on social media. And yeah, the book is available in all the major retailers, also available in audiobook if you can tolerate 9 hours of my voice.
Of course they can.
But yeah, thank you so much. I always love talking to you both and appreciate all you've done for the community. As that's another piece we didn't talk about, was finding your place, finding where you belong. And I know you two have created that for so many people. So thank you for that too.
Well, thank you, Tina.
Hey, I like that. That's sure. That's a great way to end the show right there. I know this is not your first book, right? You wrote one.
I mean, I self-published. Kind of it was essentially a rambling blog post that I like put up on the internet. Mm-hmm.
But Human Kinetics, I mean, they're a serious publisher. And they usually do those like thick tomes, you know?
Oh,
like
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Serious books.
Tim Noakes stuff.
Is the jam. Yeah. It was an interesting process. In my head, I thought when you wrote a book, it was about like you write a chapter and then they say, let's reword this sentence. Oh, you spelled something wrong there. But it's like, okay, take this. This order isn't working, so do something with it. And you're like, And then once you start taking chunks, then it doesn't flow down here. So then you have to read it. And like, so it's really a bit of it messes with your head. But it was an amazing experience. Zoe and I mean, friends, and I don't know if you could feel this, can tell which pieces I wrote and which pieces Zoe wrote. Mm-hmm. But I'm the more fluffy version, in case that wasn't obvious. But I do feel like we found a nice central voice that is quite digestible. Mm-hmm. She's coming from the publishing world. I'm coming from the, like, let's just word vomit all over the internet side. And we found a nice middle ground.
You definitely did. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we've been very happy with it. So yeah, it was cool. Great. How about you? What's coming up?
For us, Tokyo Marathon.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Be our first time going to Japan. So
we're both doing it.
We are. Yeah, we're doing it with the charity Room to Read. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, and I forgot. Yeah, you're a big reader, aren't you, Angie?
Yes, we're both. Yeah, probably.
Oh, you read a lot to each other.
Books. Our house has uncomfortable amount of books, probably. Yeah.
You're going to be, when you're in your like 80s, you're going to be one of those hoarder families that has book columns that you have to walk through to get to where you want to go. Yeah.
All right. Well, it was fun to catch up with Tina Muir. If you're out and about today on a run, you can start plogging. See one of those McDonald's big gulps on the side of the road like we see in our neighborhood sometimes? Grab it, and whatever's in it, you can finish. It's free. Nah, but it does feel good to live in an area with not a lot of litter. And that's something that really impressed us about Japan, is how clean it is. We were walking through this huge market and there's great food. There's tons of snack food in Japan, and all of it I want to try. So I buy this little tasty, I don't know, it's like this dumpling, and I was just going to eat it and walk around eating it. And apparently you don't do that. It's kind of like a faux pas to walk around eating food in Japan. You just don't see people doing it. So I bought this thing and I was about ready to tuck into it. And Angie, you're like, you're going to eat that here? And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. So then I turned down a side street, standing there in the dark, hiding my shame and eating my thing I just bought, which was tasty. And then I'm like, all right, now I got to throw this wrapper away. Let me look for a trash can. Nope, you can't find them. So you're just expected to pack it out with you, right? And it works. Hey, and speaking of Japan, keep an eye out for episode 441. Our next episode, we're going to do a massive race recap. We'll tell you all about the Tokyo Marathon. Wow, what an experience. Thank you to all of you that listen. If you haven't officially subscribed to the podcast, let's make it official. Hit that subscribe button. You can also find us on social media at Marathon Academy on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to share your story or ask a question, we have a contact form on our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, remember you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.